Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to America's Great Loop Cruisers Association's weekly Blog Talk Radio show, brought to you every week with the help of our Admiral sponsors, Curtis Stokes and Associates, Dog River Marina and Boat Works, Dozier's Waterway Guide, Dozier's Regatta Point Yachting Center, and Skipper Bob Publications. This is Beth McHugh, and I'll be doing the show this week as Janice and Steve are off attending the Rendezvous in Alabama. For those non-members listening to the show, the Great Loop is the continuous waterway that encompasses the eastern portion of North America, including the Atlantic and Gulf intercoastal waterways, the Great Lakes, the Canadian Heritage Canals, and the inland rivers of America's heartland. Our guest host this week is Joe Pica. Joe has completed the loop more than once, and today he'll tell us about cruising the lower Mississippi. Welcome, Joe, and thanks for being here.
Well, good morning, Beth. I'm glad to be here. I just wanted to express that this is a portion of the Great Loop route that's seldom traveled by anybody, but if those that are doing multiple loops want to try something different, this is a different part of the loop, and that is the section from where the Mississippi joins the Ohio River up at Cairo, Illinois, where normally the loopers would make the turn up the Ohio to get into the Cumberland or the Tennessee River to go up into the land between the lakes and then on to whatever touring they want to do in the Tennessee rivers, and then eventually down the Pentagon Bigbee Waterway to Mobile and obviously back to the Gulf and continuing their loop. This section actually goes straight. Instead of turning up the Ohio, you continue down on a section that's referred to as the Lower Mississippi River. And this is a section of waterway that's approximately 940 miles, statute miles, long. And it stretches to New Orleans, Louisiana, and out through one of the three or two channels to the Gulf of Mexico should you be getting offshore. But most people will go to New Orleans where they can intercept the Gulf Intercoastal Waterway System to continue their course to Florida and continuing on whatever the Great Loop individually starting point was. It is. What about this? Well, last week we spoke about the Ohio River, which is almost a similar length, kind of interestingly, and was such a rich touristing venue with tons of places to stop, basically, day out from town to town to town, and always had things to see and do and stores to go to, and the marinas were all over the place, the docks were everywhere, but this is different. The reality is, after you leave either Hoppy's up by the barge up by just south of St. Louis, or you leave Golconda, which is above the Smithfield-Lockham Dam on the Ohio, your first opportunity to stop at a marina is Memphis, Tennessee. And that's basically halfway down, and so really you have one decent marina in 1,300 miles. So this paints the picture. And when I say marina, I'm talking about a dock and a dock facility where you can stop. Since the Mississippi River is, at that point, is a free-flowing river without any controlled lock and dams, simply whatever flushes out of the heartland of America comes right down that river and down to the Gulf. So it changes levels a lot, and there are lots of resources available with the Army Corps of Engineers to that will forecast the water levels rises and falls. And you have, most places, you do have some kinds of Internet connectivity through cell towers, but there are places where you will have none. So going back to the distance, we're talking roughly 1,300 miles, about halfway you've got Memphis. So you have to be able to have fuel, and most cruisers do, have fuel enough to make it down this river to the first fuel point from either Hoppy's or from Golconda Illinois, up the Ohio, where you pick up fuel. Interestingly enough, the most critical resource that you run out of most quickly is not fuel, at least in our case. It can be water, potable water, because you're talking about a river that's very silty, and not to say it's polluted, but certainly it drains all the industrial Midwest and much of the country, so there's lots of crazy things in the water, chemically wise, I guess, that we should drink, unless it's really treated well. So if you wanted to run a water maker may clean out the bacteria and most of the viruses, but not the chemical makeups in some cases. And plus, it's so silt-laden from the silt running off from up in the Midwest and the farmland, it would load up your water maker pretty quickly. So the bottom line is you end up unintuitively needing to figure out, well, how much I'm going to have to savor my water supply for potability to drink. Well, you could potentially, if it's warm enough, you can bathe in the river or take water out of the river to bathe. You just rinse with your potable water if you want to do that. But just keep it in mind that you don't have the water availability to pull into a marina that you normally would. So with that in mind, you're really looking at going somewhere around 500 to 600 miles between fuel stops. So if you have that range, then you'll be fine. And when we talk about that range, remember that you are going downriver and you have a current. When we did it, it was a huge drought. It was last summer, not this current end of summer, but summer before this past. And it was a big drought in the Midwest, so the water levels were historically low, meaning the flow was also a little bit less. But we averaged about a knot, knot and a half, maybe a mile, 0.6 boost. So you can idle back your engines, conserve fuel, and just enjoy going literally with the flow. So getting back to the resources, this is the difference. This river isn't a river that is tuned to recreational boating. On our whole trip down this section of the river, almost 1,000 miles, we only saw one other recreational boat the entire trip.
And that was a
guy that had a small sort of mini little houseboat-like thing that he'd broken his trailer and was trying to get it in the Arkansas River to pick it up and get it home. So you're on your own, and this makes this I consider it a Huck Finn kind of an adventure, because you're kind of going through Samuel Clemens's old turf in the South. All those visions of Huck Finn, Huckleberry Finn, kind of coursed through my mind as we were going around the bends and the twists. That doesn't mean you're alone on the river. The number and the sizes of the tows are incredible. They're really spectacular. The normal tow that you see mostly on the East Coast and a lot of the upper rivers where there are lots of dams are about one-third to one-quarter the size of the tugs and tows you'll see on the Mississippi, because they're unencumbered by lock dimensions. It's just like being a sea. They can build them as long as they can sit underneath the bridges, they can go, and they fit between the channel walls. The largest tow array, meaning there was a tug pushing a composite of barges, was, we counted 60 barges in one composite. And that's remarkable. It looks like a city coming at you. And these are all quintessential professionals. It's amazing how easy it is to deal with them as opposed to a lot of the more novice boaters that run around in fast boats that don't know what they're doing.
There's a lot of those, unfortunately.
A boat with reckless abandon, if you will. But in any case, you contact these to negotiate passings because you are in a very twisting, turning river, and there's lots of rocks formed by what they call wing dams, and the wing dams are just jetties that come out at an angle downstream from the shores, and it forces the flow into the center of the channel to help keep it scoured clean to the deck to minimize their draft. They're needing to dredge it, but they dredge all the time anyway. And then the banks, of course, are mostly lined with some kind of reinforcement to keep erosion down. So what do you see when you're doing this, and why in the heck would you do it? Well, you know, it's just like the mountain. If you're a mountain climber, I'm not. But I said, well, you know, I've never done the lower Mississippi. I'd like to just do it once. And that was our motivation. And we had plenty of fuel. We carried a large amount of water, but I hadn't even anticipated the water being an issue. Didn't strike us until we were getting close to Memphis. So what do? Where do you stop? Well, since there are no docks, except in this one area, basically, you're going to find a place to anchor every night. You don't have a choice. So you get comfortable with your anchoring. We've anchored a lot in our history, and we're set up, and we're very comfortable at anchoring. And, of course, the question is, you've got these huge tows running up and down this river constantly. Volume, it's just unbelievable. So where can we go to be protected? And that's, of course, a paramount. If you're going to spend the night, you don't want to be where a tow could run into you, or if somebody loses a barge array, and that happens, they kind of break apart sometimes, then they float freely with the current, and these are tons and tons and tons of huge metal boxes, and you don't want to be in their way. In any case, you find there are areas, and I can say this, even at the low water, high water gives you different anchorages, low water gives you other anchorages. So there's always going to be anchorages for us, meaning recreational boaters, because there's so many areas that you can pull off behind a wing dam, which is a big rock jetty, you're fully protected, or if you look at the way the river bends. The river makes a tight bend. There's always an outside of the bend is scoured, and that's where the channel is, and the inside usually forms a point. And then downstream of that point usually trails off a sandbar of some kind, and then behind that sandbar makes a pool, and it makes a wonderful little anchorage. You have to be resourceful enough and confident to kind of poke your nose into places slowly and, you know, feel and find your depth as you go in to where you're comfortable. And in our entire trip down, we never had an occasion when we wanted to stop for the day that I couldn't find a place to anchor.
Now, when you do anchor like that, is there anything on the shore at all, or is it just sort of like being in the middle of the wilderness?
The latter, Beth, like being in the middle of the wilderness. You're there, and there's mostly, the scenery is mostly unfolds before you as sandy banks and forested scrub brush, shoals, sandy banks, woods,
wow.
Over and over and over again. And again, populated by just tremendous quantities of tows and tugs. I don't think we ever went more than a half hour without having to pass or be passed by a tug underway. And that was, to do a synopsis of the whole trip, we traveled 940 statute miles. We spent 7 days at anchor. 7 days at feed, 3 days at a mooring, and then 12 days at a dock. We had 101 engine hours, 39.6 genset hours. We used 170 gallons of fuel. That gives you an idea with that boost in that current and keeping the RPMs low, how little fuel you really need to go that far. And our total cost was about $722. The guides are... There are no real guides for the lower Mississippi. You have Quimby's, which hardly has anything in it, because there are no records. This whole section of the river is not oriented to recreational boating. And then you have the U.S. Corps of Engineer chart books, which become invaluable for many reasons. Number one, there are resources along the river that are commercial. And if you're a resourceful kind of a person, you may be able to engage them to allow you to take advantage of them. A lot of Homeland Security rules now prevent you from going to a tug service center, because these tugs pick up fuel, they pick up supplies, and there are outfits all along the river that go out and meet the tugs and provide their food. You may be able, and also give them water. So you may be able to contact somebody if you're diligent and persistent. You may be able to find the resource if you desperately need it, that you can get something to help you out with that. I'm going to step back a little bit, back to the anchoring. Along the river, and you'll see it with your charts, your Army Corps of Engineers chart books, you will see what's called slack harbors. And these are, in some cases, artificial offshoots of the river. They make a little narrow, short harbor, and it actually points upstream, but it's not in the river. They cut make a cut in the bank and the levee, and then it opens, and they go upstream and make a pool. And those are slackwater harbors where they use and establish silos or some other kind of bulk loading and unloading facility to facilitate commercial interest within that geographic area. So what do these slackwater harbors offer you is a way to get out of the river's current, regardless of flooding, because these are safe havens, and you can go way up in the end of those, staying away from the commercial interests with all the tugs moving in these harbors, and then drop the hook for the night. Generally, it's a good idea if you can raise one of the working barges that are working tugs in there to ask them, hey, where can I go for the night to stay out of your all's way? And that brings up another good point, that whenever you anchor on the river, you're going to have plenty of opportunity to engage one of the passing co-captains, inquire if, and I'll kind of quote it, hey, Captain, I'm the little recreational boat over here in the corner, and we're looking to spend the night here. Do you think we'd be out of your way here and be safe? And one co-captain, when I said that, he said, son, they're going to have to want you to get you there, which was reassuring. But they're extremely professional, and they'll give you advice. They'll tell you what not to do and what to do. That segues into another point. We really enjoyed the benefit of having an AIS transponder on board. That's the B, the recreational version, so that you transmit your location, speed, identity, anybody with an AIS receiver. The commercial traffic all have AIS A channel receivers, which are a higher priority. They transmit much more frequently and much more volume of information. But the benefit is that, think of the Mississippi as really a windy, twisty river. I mean, you're constantly going around bends or turns, switchbacks, bow tie configurations of the channel as it rambles down to the Gulf. And the AIS, even though we have an AIS receiver and you're seeing the tugs and tows, our version of AIS receiving does not compute except by line of sight where you're going to meet that tug. In other words, it's just as the crow flies, not by the contour of the waterway. You may be only 200 yards from a tug, but by water you may be 3 miles, considering the twisting of the river in a large oxbow. The tows, and all these commercial tugs and tows, have a Postal Explorer commercial electronic photography that actually maps sailing line on the actual river, in other words, the center of the channel. And for their AIS processing in that software, it tells them where on that channel they're going to meet a target. In other words, some of it's transmitting a signal. Not just line of sight, but actually where it's going to meet. And then they'll tell each other to slow down or speed up because we don't want to meet in suicide bin or whatever the kinky name is of that particular location. And so that way they're able to negotiate where they're going to pass in a safe area, not in some real tight turn where the channel's really narrow. And so they do that with you. If they see you on the on their AIS, since they have more sensitive receivers, a lot of people poo-poo AIS transponders because they think it clutters it up. In these river situations, it's very, very, very valuable. They'll contact you before you even see them on your system because they've got such larger antennas, higher profile, more sensitive equipment, and they'll raise you. In our case, it would be, hey, Carolyn Ann, what are you pushing? You know, you kind of feel foolish because you're not pushing anything. Okay, I'm just a recreational boat, and I don't mean to make you think I'm a commercial. I'm just out here trying to stay out of your way. Oh, that's good. We like that. And they'll engage you, and then they'll tell you. Now, I'm showing you meeting at this particular point. I think you shouldn't do that. You don't want to be there with me. So I want you to slow down, or if you speed up, I want you to speed up, and I'll tell you when we're going to meet at a good place. So it's
no, that's
kind of
good
benefit.
That they do that.
Oh, they're well. It's in their best interest as well. Because
yeah, that's true.
And most of them will engage you anyway because they just don't see recreational boaters on the river, and they run this constantly, so they're a little bit bored and they want to talk to you. But that's your company. Go ahead.
Can I interrupt you? We need to stop for commercial, if that's okay.
Okay.
I'll be right back.
Did you know that every mile of the Great Loop is covered by both the Waterway Guide and Skipper Bob? Use them to plan your Great Loop cruise and learn about the places you can visit. In the cockpit, important navigation info is always ready at your side, plus marina listings, anchorages, services, and so much more. Each Skipper Bob and Waterway Guide is updated yearly, and waterwayguide.com and skipperbob.net keep you current with navigation alerts, cruising news, fuel prices, and special deals. With the Waterway Guide and Skipper Bob at the helm, you'll always be on course. Order yours today at the AGLCA Ship Store at greatloop.org. Waterway Guide and Skipper Bob are proud sponsors at the Admiral level with AGLCA.
Okay.
Hey, back again, Beth. One thing I wanted to mention as we go down, we've dealt with the tugs and the tows. So what do you do when you're coursing your way down through here? Well, of course, Memphis is your big stop. Memphis has Mud Island and another marina. There's another marina just south of Memphis. So you can stop in Memphis and do all the normal Memphis things that you would like to do. Enterprise will come pick you up at Mud Island. It's a very, very interesting looking marina because it accommodates 50-foot level changes and fluctuations in the water, so it'll be remarkable just to see that. And Mud Island has a scale representation of the entire Mississippi River from Cairo down in hardscape with flowing water, and the scale is like 1 inch to a quarter mile or something. So this thing is a long hardscape walkway it's fascinating. I won't belabor it because people would really enjoy that. And then, of course, all the other attractions of Memphis with its jazz and its barbecue, and you can go over to Graceland if you so desire. And so that's your big stop. That's where you're going to do all your touristing and refurbishing or replenishing of your supplies. After that, there is a small place only 30 miles south of Memphis that's called Tunica, and it's a resort, and have this large barge that you can tie up and go to the museum, but really doesn't have resources. That's it. So what else do you do? Now you've gone halfway down this river, and you're continuing down, and there is a yacht club in Greenville, which is a little bit further down the river. But the but we were shocked to find out that they were charging New York, Manhattan dockage prices without even offering services. So we kind of skipped them. I thought it was rude to be charged $350 a foot. But you could, if you need to get in there, and they didn't entertain any options. If you wanted to go in and needed to pick up fuel, you could do it. They do have diesel there, or they did. Always call ahead on the river, any of these rivers, to verify that resources are still there. And then you could potentially get water as well. So that is an option out, but it's not too much further down south, maybe 100 and some miles south of Memphis. But that's it. Okay, so my wife really wanted to visit some places, so we're trying to figure out how in the heck we're going to do this if nobody has any docks. And in many cases where the towns are, you're in a straightaway. It's just either commercial wharfs, a fleeting area for barges, large commercial offloading facilities. Well, that's where the phone comes in. You go and make 40,000 phone calls, and eventually you may get somebody that can give you an option. And we did that in Vicksburg. Vicksburg, it's up the Yazoo River, and that's something with the Vicksburg battlefield and all of its history is an interesting place to see. So we were able to make contact with a owner of a small sunset tour boat, one of these catamaran boats, 50-some foot, and he had it tied up to the bank of the Yazoo River by long lines of cables. He was gracious enough to say, yeah, you can tie up next to me, alongside of me, and we did so, but it required us crawling through one of his open windows from our foredeck, getting inside his little boat, and then going to the bank and hopping off of this ramp that he had onto pallets that were stretched across the mud to get the hard ground. But it was our access point. And so we did that, and we had a nice visit, in there. But I just tell you this as to give people an idea that, you know, it's not impossible to find ways, and I'm sure others would find even more ways, to stop at some of these interesting venues. And the only other place we stopped was Natchez. And Natchez is a wonderful town to stop. It has more antebellum homes because they invited Grant in, didn't, to serving dinner after Vicksburg was destroyed. Natchez doesn't have any docks either. And there's really, you could potentially anchor right on a bank, but you're still in the river and there isn't a safe place to do it. Potentially you could try and anchor behind a bridge abutment. In the current shadow of it, but again, that's kind of tenuous. We were able to make contact with a rubble offloading barge operation in Vidalia, which is right across the river from Natchez. And it was he said if he didn't have a barge there to offload, he would let us tie up to his offloading rig, and that's what we did. And we had to pay him a little bit of money and sign a waiver of liability. And literally we're tied up to a barge, big old steel barge that's half sinking because they had trash pumps running 24/7 to drain it, and it had a big backhoe on it. We would scamper across it, get down onto the levee, and then walk up over the levee where we could meet a rental car. That was our visit to Natchez. And again, I say this as an illustration of how you have to be resourceful and flexible in contrast to most of the places we call, look through, and we make a decision on which of the many marinas we want to go to. That is not the case on the lower Mississippi.
It's really an adventure.
It's an adventuresome adventure. Because a great loop to me, Beth, both times I've done it, it's been a great personal adventure, but not necessarily adventuresome. The lower Mississippi is a great personal adventure that is adventuresome, but it's still fun. I mean, it's still interesting. It's fascinating. It's fun to do. Now, what's the ultimate destination? Obviously, you're going to hit New Orleans. And there are no marinas, and this is kind of interesting. There are no marinas in New Orleans.
That's weird.
Yes, you're going to go along the waterfront where you see all the the big hotels and the convention centers and all, and there are no marinas there. There's no place to stop. You go into the Industrial Canal, and that takes you up to Lake Pontchartrain. After you get through the lock and you go up to Lake Pontchartrain, there are marinas in the south shore of Lake Pontchartrain, actually rimming Lake Pontchartrain, where you can leave the boat. And we stayed, and we highly recommend one that was the Lake Pontchartrain Resort Marina, and it's right above the junction with the Gulf ICW before you actually get into the lake. And they had a very low-cost shuttle. They'd take you right down to the French Quarter and pick you up. So that's your visiting. You can either go there or you go on the south shore to one of the many other marinas that are up on Lake Pontchartrain to do your visiting of New Orleans. And believe me, we would have stayed longer in New Orleans, except I didn't have a belt that would fit me after several days.
And they do have great food and beverages.
They know how to eat and party.
Oh, yes, they do.
If anything, they had a brand new, they had just opened this, the World War II, National World War II Museum is above the Garden District in New Orleans now. And for all of us, that's worth a visit. It was by far a very incredibly well-done museum. And it's a huge complex. They've finished two buildings, and they're going to be building two more buildings. And it's amazing. They have a four-dimensional, instead of a 3D, it's a 4D movie theater talking about the war. And Tom Hanks is the narrator, and lightning goes off. Your seat moves when the tanks run over you, and it snows on you in the Battle of the Bulge. It gets cold, and it's all weird. Rains on
amazing.
It also is a glimpse into what our greatest generation did for us. And it touches it, not just we won the battle kind of a stuff, but it really gets into the meat of war and warring, talking to and having sound bites and interviews with people on both sides and their families and what it was like. I can't recommend it enough. It's an enriching experience, an education in itself.
Well, I guess it looks like we've kind of pretty much run out of time. Actually, we went over, but that's okay. It was all very interesting. I really, really appreciate you doing this.
Well, Beth, I appreciate it. I just hope people take advantage and to see the different things that are available in this beautiful country of ours by water. That's the richness that we enjoy with the boats.
Yeah, and, it is an amazing trip, and all the historical sites you can see up close and personal that you really can't see any other way. So,
that's correct.
I hope that you've inspired lots of people to do the trip.
Well, I appreciate that, and I hope they do the trip. It's well worth it. It's literally an event of a lifetime. And, well, Beth, you have a good day, and I'll be signing off.
Okay, bye. Thanks again, Joe.